Before we start the show, I want to thank the thousands of you, the thousands who have read This Book Will Make You Dangerous. Many of you have told me that the book's unique way of exploring fear, confidence, and purpose has had a lasting impact, that it's much easier for you to get clarity and direction about what really matters and what you want to do in this lifetime. It's also amazing to hear that quite a few of you have read it multiple times and even bought copies for friends. So thank you again. Just in case you weren't aware, I created a free companion video course for the book. And in these videos, I walk you through the big takeaways and practices from each chapter. And I even cover some extra stuff that's not included in the book. Information on how to access the course is in newer versions of the book. And if you own an older version of the book and you don't know how to access the course, just hit me up via the contact form at triplanier.com and we'll get you all set up. And one last thing, if you're one of the thousands who have already read the book, please consider leaving an honest review on Amazon so that others can decide if it's right for them. Again, thank you so much for reading This Book Will Make You Dangerous. And now let's start the show.
You are listening to The New Man Beyond the Macho Jerk and the New Age Wimp. Your host is men's coach and group facilitator, Trip Lanier.
Do you believe that once you're married, your sex life is dead? Do you want more sex than your partner? And are you using porn or an affair to take care of your sexual needs? In this episode, we've got renowned sex therapist, Shondor Gardoz, here to share some simple things you can do today to get your sex life off of life support. Welcome to The New Man. Today I've got Dr. Shondor Gardoz back on the show. He's a clinical psychologist, sex therapist, founder of MyPleasure.com, and he's a contributor to many major men's and women's magazines. Shondor, welcome back to The New Man.
Hey, great to be back, Trip.
So we've got to get down to some really important business right off the bat, because I hear that you're connected to Oprah's vajayjay in some way. Tell me the story. What's going on with that?
So about a couple months ago, Oprah actually had an episode pretty much devoted to sex toys, and she's never done that before. And she held up a toy that was one of ours, basically.
Your company, right?
It the Shure. What?
Your company, MyPleasure.com?
MyPleasure.com.
Okay.
It's not one of the ones I designed, but it's a toy that we're the official place to buy it.
Okay.
And she called it the Shure Thing. So you can imagine any vibrator that Oprah has called the Shure Thing, what's going to happen to that product. So we've been bringing over it by, you know, we've been airlifting crate, you know, shipping containers full of this stuff, and we can't keep it in stock. It's called the Aphrodite. It's been quite a phenomena.
I love it.
And, you know, it's kind of an amusing story, but I think there's an interesting sort of sub-story here in that what an untapped market there apparently is here, that the fact that there's so many people out there who are just waiting for someone like Oprah to tell them it was okay.
She made it all right.
She made it all right.
That's cool.
And so that I think is a wonderful thing. And it just really goes to show what we've been saying all along in My Pleasure about that this is going to become more and more mainstream, that people are going to be more and more interested in taking an active role in making their sex lives better. And it's so funny because when I started My Pleasure 8 years ago, our BHAG, our big, hairy, audacious goal was one day this is going to become so normalized that Oprah is going to mention it.
Congratulations.
So there we are. And I was like, wow, what do we do now?
You made it.
Okay, check.
Well, awesome. Well, you said something in there about kind of taking a stand or going after making our sex lives better. And one of the things that I notice over and over again is guys talking, when guys are just shooting the shit and they're like, you know what, man, you know, well, when you get married, your sex life is over. And even Chris Rock, I was watching one of his specials and he was like, I haven't fucked in 10 years, but I've had intercourse. There's this whole thing of like the married life equals death to sex. And yeah. You know, and then like I can imagine the guy, you know, I get the emails from guys like, hey, what do I do? I mean, my wife, she's working all the time. She has a job. She's got to take care of the kids. When I go up to her and I want to have sex, you know, I get the cold shoulder, and I get it. Like, I get that she's tired, yeah. But nonetheless, these guys are like, they have their own sexual desires, and it ends up kind of either it gets repressed, goes to porn, maybe an affair, all that stuff. Yeah. So it's like, man, what can this guy do?
Right, right. God, I think this is such a great topic because I think this is the norm. I certainly hear it all the time in my practice. I hear it from all the places that where I talk. I don't think this is a myth. I don't think that this is, there is a lot of truth to the fact that once you're married, you have kids, you've been together for a longer period of time, the sex changes rather dramatically for most couples.
And is it a chemical thing? Because, you know, a lot of magazines want to reduce things down to, like, biology. Well, there's testosterone and the estrogen is blah, blah, blah. But is it really that, or is it just that they're freaking exhausted, or are they just not that interested in each other? Or?
You know, I want to go into some of the causes, but I want to say one or two things first.
Okay.
And because I think there's two important things. There's one piece of really bad news and one piece of really good news for your listeners who are in this situation that I want to kind of get out there first.
All right.
The bad news is, unless as a guy, if this rings true to you, if you're like, oh my God, that's me, that's us. The bad news is, unless you make a change, this is not going to get better. Unfortunately, what I see a lot of guys saying is, well, you know, I'm just not going to focus on this right now. I got my work that's keeping me happy. You know, after, you know, in a couple years, once the kids are a little bit older, then maybe we'll get back to having some hot sex.
And it just doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen that way. Or that it somehow magically, after a couple years of both you and your wife disconnecting, shutting off from your own desire, that once you have the quote-unquote time again, that it's just going to magically be easy to reconnect.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work that way. So that's the bad news.
All right.
The good news is that kind of situation you talked about, while it's very common, is probably not as bad as you think it is. I'll explain it. What I see with couples, and this kind of situation, a sex therapist, we call this desire discrepancy. This is the number one thing that sex therapists work with. You ask any sex therapist, what's your number one thing you work with the clients? It's this. And what we're all seeing is that when couples get a little out of sync, they start, all you have to be is a little bit out of sync, and you start polarizing.
And what do you mean by polarizing? What does that mean?
Basically, that the man and the woman, and I'm assuming a heterosexual relationship here, but that you're a little bit off in how much you want sex or what kind of sex or the type, intensity of sex. If you're off a little bit, because of the dynamic you develop around that, you start becoming off more and more as time goes by.
Mm-hmm.
So an example would be, this is so common, they'll be working with a couple, and the guy says, oh my God, you know, if it was up to her, we would never have sex.
Mm-hmm.
I have to approach her 20 times a day, because if I didn't, then we wouldn't have sex ever. Because she only says yes once out of every 100 times. So if I want to have sex once a week, I got to approach her 20 times a day.
Wow.
I talk to the woman, and she goes, oh my God, if we had sex as often as he wanted to, we would have sex fucking 20 times a day. I have to turn him down all the time, or we would never get out of the house.
Wow.
And then I ask the guy, well, you know, okay, I get it. In an ideal world, how often would you have sex? He's like, I don't know, 3 times a week. And I ask her, she's like, I don't know, 3 times a week, maybe 2 times a week. They're off by like 1 time a week.
Uh-huh.
But they're convinced they're off by a factor of 100.
Wow, so it's just this perception that is getting in the way. And I imagine just like there's a hurt there. I've been in this scenario where
sure.
I was in a long-term relationship and the girl that I was with didn't want to have sex all the time. And I did. And I just remember being like, freaking hurt. I couldn't understand why she wouldn't want to do something that we both enjoyed. It was clear that she
absolutely
enjoyed it too, but it hurt me. I took it personally.
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. And I think that's where a lot of this polarization starts happening, is when we get, you know, there's these perceived rejections And when you're rejected, what you perceive as sexually or as a man by the person you care about most, that can really hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you start going into various kinds of coping mechanisms, mm-hmm. which to protect yourself, which unfortunately, long term, makes this even worse.
Well, so what's an example of a coping mechanism?
So one example for, I think, a lot of guys is they kind of shut off their own desire. That they're like, okay, you know what? I'm just not going to worry about this. I'm going to go into my own little office and masturbate to porn. It's not that big a deal. And it's nothing, and again, I'm nothing against porn or masturbating, but I think it's that shutting off. It's that I don't have desires. I want to keep this relationship harmonious. I understand she's busy and she's tired. I don't want to bother her.
Right.
So I'm not even going to approach her anymore. I'm not even going to let her know I'm even interested.
Got it.
You know, and unfortunately, while that's an understandable response, in a sense, you've kind of given up. Mm-hmm. You're making the situation worse long term. And I think there are terrible personal and relationship consequences to that kind of coping mechanism. Because if you're shutting off your own desire, your own sexuality, to try to keep the peace in your relationship, you're cutting yourself off from one of the greatest vital life forces. You are just not going to be as vital. You are just not going to be as alive as a man in the world.
Yeah, the last time that you were on the show, we had a long talk about how we could use that sexual desire as fuel for so many of the other things that we have in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And if you are trying to just keep the peace and to do that, shutting off part of yourself, it's not going to serve you, and it's not going to serve the relationship, because on some level, it may be unconscious, you know what you're doing, and you're going to start building resentment mm-hmm. towards your partner. And long-term resentment is one of the things that is the most hard to recover from in a relationship.
And that resentment is just like there's on the surface it can be, hey honey, can I get you anything? But underneath it is like, you bitch. There's a right. It's like it's that shadow darkness mm-hmm. of like, she doesn't like me, she rejects me, she doesn't want to have sex. You know, it's like where something's rotting in the refrigerator, and ultimately it's going to affect how we interact with one another.
Totally. When you get to that point of sort of like a distaste, that is almost irreversible. When you start getting even a small level of sort of distaste for your partner, that's very hard to recover from. It's one of the anger is easy to recover from. You know, lots of big, loud things are pretty easy to recover from.
Uh-huh.
It's that seething distaste that's almost impossible to back away from.
And it's funny because we tend to avoid anger by doing the by repressing it.
Yep.
And that's what makes it worse, right? So if I'm the guy sitting out there right now, I'm like, well, shit, now I'm really screwed. Well, not really. I'm not getting what I want in the bed. And if I try to do these, you know, one of these coping mechanisms, I'm running into even more serious trouble. Well, all right,
right.
We got to help him out.
So let's go into some real practical stuff.
Yeah.
An average guy can start playing with to turn this around.
Okay.
And I don't think it's that difficult sometimes. I mean, it can be, but for most people, it's some very, because ultimately, as I said, sometimes the difference is not as big as you think, that I think some simple techniques can really make all the difference in starting to get you guys back on track. So one of the things I think you want to do is something to try to change that dynamic. So let's go back to that guy who, and I'm assuming the guy wants more sex, because that was, and it's not by any means always the case. I'd
right.
say half the times I see couples where there's a difference, it's the woman who wants sex more than the guy.
Right. And a lot of guys are out there like, God, why can't my wife be that way?
Yeah, you know what? It's not good either way, trust me. Neither guy is any happier when I see them. Anyway, so let's go with that example where that guy is like, oh my God, you know, I swear, like every time I approach her, she's just like, nah, now, honey, can't you see I'm busy, or no, I'm tired, or whatever. And he's just starting to get frustrated. He's like, well, I mean, I'm not going to get my needs met, but, you know, hell, I got kids, and, you know, I'm not going to leave her, and, you know, you just start spiraling into this awfulness, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
What do you do? So one of the first things that I recommend is what we would call non-goal-oriented sensuality. That what happens a lot of times in this dynamic is that you're approaching her, she's kind of tired, and you go over and just nuzzle her neck, and her thought is, oh, fuck, he's going to want to have sex.
Mm-hmm.
I'm too tired to have sex right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's brushing off, you know, even the first initiation of any kind of sensuality, because she's worried that what that means is now I've got to commit. That I need to decide right now whether I want to have full-blown intercourse or not.
She's nipping it in the bud. If she's tired, she doesn't want anything, because it's going to send the guy the signal that he can go for it.
Right.
Okay.
So you want to screw up that dynamic, basically. You want to keep her guessing as to what you're really going for.
Okay. How do you do that?
And that's by becoming, and this can be a little, this can be a whole new way of being, which I think is actually a wonderful way. It's not just a little mind fuck. It's not just a trick. Because if you do it as a trick, she's going to figure it out.
Yeah.
This is actually a different way of being in the world. It's a way of changing your relationship to sexuality that is really going to open up whole new possibilities for you, which is not being so goal-oriented around sex. That I think most guys have learned that sex is about ejaculation.
Mm-hmm.
That is the goal. That everything else is just quote-unquote foreplay, right?
Right.
So this is about a practice of beginning to try to enjoy other things that don't necessarily involve intercourse or orgasm.
Yeah, and if I just put myself in her, you know, position, here comes this guy and he's clinging, he's wanting something from me, and it's like he wants to put this thing inside. I'm tired. It's like, oh God, get away. And right. but in the sense of just like when there's that energy's gone, and there's just like he's a little more curious about her, and just maybe just
or
wants
just
to snuggle
or just appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
That's a totally different. Yeah, I mean, women can sense when there's like that neediness, and that is really not very attractive.
Yeah.
Well,
then she feels like a receptacle at that point for your
absolutely.
Ejaculation.
Exactly, and okay. It feels demanding on her.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, what you want to start doing is playing with things that are just freestanding, just that you and she can enjoy as is, without it necessarily needing to go somewhere.
Okay.
So that might be just going, giving her a sexy glance, and then just, you know, go about what you were doing before you did that.
Mm-hmm.
Or sending her a hot email about a little fantasy you had about her. Or going up and, you know, nuzzling on the neck, biting her, and then walking away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually a wonderful way of building arousal and passion, too. Because
mm-hmm.
then, at first, you know, she's going to be like, what the hell was that? You know?
Right.
But once you start, this starts becoming part of the way you play with each other, it can be really enticing. And she's going to start doing similar things to you.
Right.
And you're going to start building that juiciness throughout the day. So when you do finally get together, it's going to be really much more intense.
Right. It's going to feel less like the routine, you know, like, okay, the kids are in bed and we got 10 minutes and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, when you're talking about the causes, you know, when you're asking about what causes this, routine is one of them. It's very easy for us in all areas of our life to get into sort of a pat kind of routine. And when it comes to sex, routine is really the enemy of passion.
Mm-hmm.
That novelty is one of the greatest aphrodisiacs.
Mm-hmm.
So anything you can do to make things a little bit different, and it doesn't have to be dramatic. I think sometimes people get into this thing like, oh, God, you know, I don't have time to come up with a whole full-blown fantasy and buy the costumes. And, you know, it doesn't have to be that big a deal. It can be as simple as changing the time of day or changing the room.
Mm-hmm.
Or just, you know, very small changes can have a dramatic impact.
But the big thing under there is... But the big thing under there is for him to kind of shift his energy around like, all right, I'm trying to get something from her in this moment. I want to try to get her, you know, in a position where I can have sex with her. And instead of just let that go and be playful.
Yep.
Listen, it don't have to spend a lot of money. You don't have to do a whole lot of anything. Just let that go and be playful.
Tune in next week for part two of our talk with Sean Dorgardos. He'll be sharing more practical advice for getting your sex life back on track. Thanks for listening.